the 80s, music was vital in bringing young people together in a spirit of rebellion and counterculture. Punk and post-punk was huge, and Chicago had its fair share of awesome rockers, some of whom have been forgotten until now.
Our story today begins with our neighbor and dear friend, Eric Clemens, who discovered a giant box of cassette tapes at a thrift store. Among the massive collection of pop music was a few cassettes of a band he had never heard of called The Veil, whose rock music and strong lead vocals by Lorna Donnelly could have easily been played in rotation on MTV or featured in a soundtrack of a John Hughes film. Eric fell in love with the music, and while he couldn't find much information about the band at first, his detective work led him on an incredible journey.
Today, writer Eric Clemens joins us to talk about bringing the band Lorna Donnelly and The Veil back from the cultural abyss with a new release of music no one ever heard until now.
Plus, Madonna plays tribute to Marilyn Monroe in her latest photo shoot for V Magazine.
The Baltimore Museum of Art dedicates a set of all-gender bathrooms to filmmaker John Waters.
Mariah Carey says it's now time to play All I Want for Christmas Is You.
And just when you thought it was safe to go back into the preserve, Tiger King 2, the sequel to the outrageous documentary on private zoos, big cats, and meth, is coming to Netflix this month. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun. Our guest today can be best described as a Sherlock Holmes for Chicago's long-forgotten indie music. Our dear friend and neighbor, writer Eric Paul Clemens, life suddenly took an unexpected turn at a thrift store when he discovered a giant box of old cassette tapes from Chicago's music scene of the late 80s. Welcome to Feast of Fun, Eric.
Welcome back,
Thank
Eric.
You. It's yeah. great to be back.
People will remember you fondly as the guy who got a little treat in the locker room one day.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you were like, sort of like, what is the name of that guy? It's a Wonderful Life.
Jimmy Stewart.
He's like, there was a penis in the locker room.
Yeah, it was... I don't know if the people remember or not, but yeah.
Oh, they remember.
Oh, they remember.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of the old time listeners. What was that, like 8 years ago?
Yeah, that was about 9 years ago.
So for people who are not familiar with your story, so your first appearance on the podcast was pretty outrageous. You were talking about a guy who you're consider yourself cisgendered, heterosexual guy.
Correct.
Married, happily married.
Happily married.
Very happily married.
Hell yeah.
And this guy, and but you're also, you know, very queer friendly mm-hmm. to the point that people wonder if you're bisexual, right?
Yeah.
And so you're like hanging out in the locker room at our gym. And this gentleman was like, hello, would you like to see the goods? And proceeds to show you his boner. And you're like,
it was a Hollywood loaf.
What's a Hollywood loaf?
Well, it's not like fully erect, but it's just kind of engorged,
yeah.
right?
Yeah, it
so
was
it
engorged.
Looks good on camera.
Well, I mean... I'd like to see the thing completely soft because it was like, it was huge.
Well,
I don't think he didn't need a loaf.
Studio of, right now.
Yeah. No, behind me. He's in the closet. So he made eye contact with me and he was just like stroking and I don't know. You've seen it. 10 or 11 inches.
No.
I remember you getting so mad at me because I was just like, it's not that big.
And it's
like,
nine.
You've seen the same porn that I've seen and you know that's
I mean,
a big
it's con. Nine.
I would say like 7 or 8, you know, yeah.
I would go 8 or 9.
Yeah, I mean, I've never
seen... And thick, too.
Yeah, I was definitely thick.
What did it taste
like,
though?
I never saw it fully erect, though, because everybody talked about this
person.
Because everybody was just like... This guy is so aggressive. This is wild. So,
well, the funny thing about it is like we went to see Dolly Parton at Ravinia.
Years later
at the Ravinia Music Festival. I was like, oh, this is going to be a lot of tea in that men's bathroom. You know, that's slang for, you know, men cruising each other. Mm-hmm. And I go to use the bathroom and who is there is your friend.
Yeah.
With his dick hanging out. I was like, you're going to miss the concert. He's like, you don't know what I'm missing.
No, he was a nice guy. We ended up talking.
And you actually kind of were able to get him to stop stalking you in such a way because you befriended him.
Well, yeah. Well,
you made him seem like as a person.
Yeah, there was two different
like
parts.
In Silence of the Lambs, when they kept calling Catherine. What was the daughter's
name? Catherine.
Catherine, the daughter's name. So they're like, oh, they're trying to make her seem like a human.
It was like, yeah, there was like two different parts with him. There's like the part where it was like afternoon, early evening of him cruising. And then there was the morning when it's like 6 a.m. and he's just like, I'm just getting a workout. And it was just kind of like, it was very much like he's not in the mood.
He was all business in the morning. Yeah. And then afternoon he would get horny and come back to
him. Yeah. And that's when I like broke through to him was in the morning. He became, you know, I think he knew that he became a werewolf at night, but in the morning I could like, you know, be friends with him.
Well, he's one of those guys that realizes is like, if I stay in shape, I'll be more successful cruising the locker room, where some people just go to the gym to cruise the locker room.
Yeah.
You know, those were the good old days. Then the COVID pandemic struck and ruined everything. But one good thing about all that free time, you know, when the COVID pandemic first started, everyone's like, I'm going to finish my book. I'm going to, you know, work.
I'm going to start a podcast.
You know, all this other stuff. And some people were successful. Other people weren't. But you actually managed to you know, bring this forgotten band back from the grave. So the band is called The Veil, and you found a box of over 100 cassette tapes at the Village Thrift Store in Chicago.
That's right. It was one Saturday. I went to the Village Discount Thrift Store in Chicago, and I came across about 120 cassettes, and I had to buy all of them if I wanted to get any of them.
So it's just like one big box.
Yeah, well, it was a bunch of different bags, and each bag had about 8 or 9 cassettes, and each bag was 40 cents each, and each bag had something really cool in it. So I just kind of like, I want this bag, this bag, this bag, this bag, and I'll figure it out when I get home. But I know like each one, I want something. So 40 cents, it was totally worth it.
And at the thrift store, they usually sell bags, plastic bags with a bunch of junk in them.
It's exactly where I'm talking about, the hanging bags.
Yeah. And I always find those really fascinating because you look at them and you're like, ooh, I wonder what, you know, like there's some cool, long forgotten things in there and then junk.
Definitely.
And so you were like, I don't know if these cassette tapes were going to even work, even if there's going to be anything worth listening to it. But you brought it home, and your, you know, girlfriend at the time, now wife, she just rolls her eyes.
Well, she was supportive, but I did pack up my, fortunately I brought an empty backpack with me to the Village Discount. I just packed it up, and yeah, within those 120 cassettes, there was like David Bowie, the Velvet Underground.
Recordings of it.
There was actual commercial cassettes. Oh, wow. So within the lot, there were commercial cassettes of some really cool stuff. Iggy Pop. But within that were some mixtapes, some stuff I didn't understand, or some stuff I wasn't familiar with. But each bag had something cool in it, so I just grabbed every bag, went home. I figured the night would be cool. I could just go through these cassettes, decide which ones I want, which ones I didn't want, and drink some beer and look them up and see if maybe some are worth something and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
And so you discovered among them, they were like master tapes or something, right?
Yeah. Well, among them,
or a band you didn't recognize.
Yeah, there was a band. There was an independent released 4-track cassette, which it's like a cassette you get like at a concert or a show, I should say. And it just has 4 tracks on it. It just gives you like, you know, the band selling it like in 1988.
With merch.
Merch. Yeah. But it's just like independent, blah, blah. They made 100 or 200 of them. So I saw that and I looked it up. I couldn't find anything about them at all. So then I put that in the reject pile along with the mixtapes, all this other stuff. So then I looked at the reject pile, and there's probably 50 or 60 cassettes in there at least. And I found this one that said, it was handwritten, Veil Masters, rehearsal tapes, Veil rehearsal tapes, that is, Veil EP sessions, Veil EP final mixes. So in all, if you include that independently released one, it was 8 cassettes by The Veil, this band that I never heard of, and this band that I could find nowhere online. So what I did was I looked at that independently released one that has like the names and is sort of a little more put together. And I found the name Lorna Donnelly. So then I looked up The Veil, Lorna Donnelly. Before I was looking up The Veil Chicago band and was coming up empty.
But you found Victoria Lamar singing with a Vietnamese band, Chicago band.
Oh, yeah, exactly. So I looked up and I found Lorna Donnelly, and I found that I found one article from doing that. I found one article in the Chicago Tribune from 1988, September 1988, about the Veil, this band called the Veil. And from there, I learned that they were in this, two of the main members were in this other band in the early 80s called Da, which is a Chicago post-punk band. I learned about like, just a little bit about like, you know, they were trying something different this time, a little bit about their story. So I looked up Da and they had a few videos and I thought they looked cool. They had a Wikipedia page. And then I looked up, and then through that, I found out Lorna Donnelly had, passed away and she was the,
She was the lead singer.
She was the, one of the primary songwriter, I would say, along with David. And, she was also the bass player.
And so you were managed to locate the surviving band member of the Veil, David Thomas.
Yeah. So
this is where the story gets unbelievable.
So what happened was I found out Lorna had passed away and stuff. And I felt bad just putting these Veil tapes back in the reject pile. Cause they were nowhere there. I could at least put them on YouTube or something like that. So then I put them away and just decided
not, you were wanting to digitize them to put it onto the internet
at the very least, yeah. Because I felt bad that this music is just going to like go away. So then I kept them, I hung on to them. And then I, about 2 months later, I was just hanging out, listening to music. And then I saw those tapes in my cabinet and I was like, oh, what the hell? And then I put one on and I just like fell in love with it. And I'm like, oh my God, this is really, really good. And then I put on another one that had another, you know, 8 songs or something. It was a mixtape and it was really good too. And, you know, before I knew it, I had 10 or 11 songs. I'm like, well, I can make a record out of this, you know?
And so your friend came over. He's like, hey, man, is that Freedom Rock? You're like, no, it's the Veil. We'll turn it up. Yeah. And so you contacted KTEL and they're like, we're out of business.
Yeah. So I was kind of like freaking. It was late at night. My wife was asleep and I was kind of like, oh, my God, this is really good. So I looked at that indie cassette again. I knew Lorna had passed away, but I looked at the article. Lorna had passed away. The other main member of the band was this guy named David Thomas. And I looked,
Wendy's guy.
Yeah. The same guy.
Rock and roll, man.
Yeah. not the Wendy's guy, the guy from SCTV.
Oh, that's right.
The guy from the beer movie. What's it called?
I don't know. Dave Thomas.
Yeah, Dave Thomas with
The Great White North or something.
God, it's the beer movie with Harold.
Harold Ramis.
No. It's with Rick John Moranis. Candy? Rick Moranis.
No, I don't.
Anyway.
Not the burger tycoon, the musician, David Thomas.
Yeah, then the Facebook member. And I found him on Facebook pretty easily, and I said, hey, I'm interested in making this music of, you know, no profit to me. I just want to, or I'm interested in releasing this on vinyl, no profit to me. I just want to, you know, whatever.
It's and really, he said to really you, he great. Like, where's the beef? And you're like, no, I'm going to do it nonprofit.
And I said, oh, good one. Yeah. And
then, the beef's in the locker room. Well, this was another
podcast. Yeah. So you reach out to him and
you tell him you found this stuff, right? And is he like, wow, that's really weird? Or
the next day he contacted me because it was so late. And he said, that's interesting. How'd you hear about it? And then I showed him the tapes that I found. And he got back to me. He said, okay, let's get together and talk about it. So so after that, I was looking at his Facebook page a little closer, and we had two friends in common. One was a Chicago music guy here, which is no surprise. And the other guy was this guy that my dad had known for 45 years, and he went to high school with him. And I was like, by the way, how do you know this guy? It's just kind of a weird, like, so we had two friends in common. One was that guy. And he said, are you Greg Clements' son? Or he goes, you're Greg Clements' son, aren't you? And he goes, I graduated from Brentwood High School in 1974, blah, 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 blah. So it turns out this guy, David, he went to my high school. I graduated in 98. He graduated in 74. He played baseball with my dad. My dad graduated in 75. And he dated my aunt, my mom's sister, for 2 years. And I actually have a picture of my mom and my and her siblings, along with the aunt, of course, and David Thomas at Christmas in 1973.
That's weird.
And then you got into a time machine and went back in time to try to get your parents to fall in love with each other.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. And I started, like, I saw a picture of myself and I was getting invisible. And
then you went into the band. And you're like, I got to get the veil back together. Otherwise, I cease to exist.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it is kind of weird. Like, I mean, you know, I am kind of joking, but there is a sort of Back to the Future kind of aspect to this, because you discovered this band that had been forgotten, erased from time, sitting in this bin. And, you know, this band had a deep connection to you and your family.
Yeah, I mean, there was a connection. Definitely. I think that there were so many opportunities just to pass up the cassettes or give away the cassettes and not listen to the cassette. And then when I finally opened it up and listened to it and the music was great, to find that connection was there. It's just like the biggest needle in a haystack I'll ever have in my
How did it end up at the Village Thrift?
David and his wife were moving out of their place a little west of here in Bowmanville, mm-hmm. just like, you know, half mile west of here, and they were moving downtown to a nice to a smaller high-rise, a nice mm-hmm. high-rise. And David needed to get rid of a lot of stuff, so he purged and he finally said goodbye to all these things.
That's got to be kind of emotional to get. I mean, did he have copies of this music, or was this was the music?
He had some. Well, that's the thing. The Veil recorded twice. So the cassettes that are, or pardon me, the music that is made from this record are from masters. Fortunately, there were masters.
So he saved the masters.
Yeah.
Yes.
The masters were saved by the respective engineers.
Okay.
But no, I mean, he wasn't planning on doing anything with them. Mm-hmm. You know, that music had been dormant lost for 30 plus years.
Because they were recorded in 89, was it?
They recorded in 87 and 89.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where, you know, no one was keeping up with the legacy. No one posted any music about them. The only mention of the Veil was that Tribune article and in Lorna's obituaries, mm-hmm. Lorna Donnelly's obituaries, there's mention of the Veil at the very end of the mm-hmm. list of other bands she's been in. Mm-hmm. But it was a totally lost mm-hmm. band.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, you've told me about this project when you first started working on it. And I do. And now that I've seen pictures of Lorna as she's older, because most of the stuff I've seen is when she's younger, is I do remember when she died, because there was a lot of people in the nightclub scene and the music scene. They all, I think they had something at the Metro for her, didn't they? Like some kind of memorial for her.
That sounds really familiar.
And so I remember a lot of people, like especially some of the club kids that I knew from the Medusa age. You know, I wasn't around during Medusa's time period, but certainly I knew a lot of people that were. And I remember seeing a lot of Facebook updates about, you know, her passing at the time.
Yeah. So I didn't know anything about her at the time until this project came about. But I would say that when I was researching them initially and, you know, finding out about the Veil and finding out about Da, you know, it was, you know, Lorna's obituaries. I say obituaries and, you know, they were in the Tribune, the Sun-Times, mm-hmm. Like ones with photos and stuff. Mm-hmm. The Reader, like yeah. big, like, so I knew she was... And then also speaking with people in the last like 3.5 years, you know, she was a pretty important presence to this, to the Chicago music community and she performed music. She performed, you know, I would say mostly on and off, but mostly she performed here from 1978 to 1993, in like, you know, four different bands. That's a long time. I mean, yeah. she started when she was 17 and then she ended when, you know, whenever that is, when she was 32 or 33.
And she died at Chicago. Age of like 53, I think, right?
She died at 53. Yeah. That's right. Just suddenly.
And in Chicago, she was seen as this punk hero, you know, a central figure to the music scene mm-hmm. at a time period where, you know, there's no internet. It's just people making music at clubs and enjoying it with each other.
That's right. I mean, as far as I'm not first person knowledge on this, but, you know, sharing tapes, going to shows. It was very DIY, as, you know, punk like to call them.
What made you want to then, you know, not just upload these cassette tapes to YouTube, but actually like you get the band back together, you know, virtually, I guess, and release an album? You have it right here. It's called Time Stand Still, the greatest, most lost band of all time ever.
Yeah, that's the hype sticker says that, the last thing that Fausto said.
Why put the band back together? Is this because these are ghosts? Yeah, I mean, to some degree, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the band is.
Are they haunting you?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's. I mean, are they the
like it's like the end of Star Wars, Revenge of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi. Sorry, and they're all standing there, glowing, giving you a nodding approval, and you're like, "Wait a minute, aren't you like the Darth Vader? Why are you still glowing?" Oh, because he recanted his sins.
I mean, I do, you know, I listening to the music, I was like blown away. And the fact that no one knew about this band. And why not make a record? You know, why not make something to, you know, obviously I'm being the producer and I'm the, you know, my name is on the back of this record. It's probably one of the most proudest moments of my life being able to put out this music. And the opportunity was there and it was in my lap. And I think like, you don't get those opportunities all the time. So I just saw a really an interesting opportunity to, I'm a music lover. I'm a big music lover. I love records and all that stuff. So why not, put my, you know,
heart and soul,
put my heart and soul. Yeah. Put like something in the sand, put a stick in the sand or whatever you want to call it. And just say, you know what, I'm going to make this record and it's going to have my name on it. I'm going to be responsible for making this record because I know when at the end, I'll be so proud of it.
Should we like listen to a little bit of a track?
Sure. Definitely. You want to listen to, what did I post? well, you want to listen to Groovy Nights?
Yeah. Groovy let's Nights. See. So the back, let's go to the back side. It's Off My Blocks, The Crown, Hold Me, Gunpowder Mouth, Crack the Sky. Mm-hmm. Greg Clemens is awesome. Oh, no wonder that you like him. Yeah. Groovy Nights, Your Hand in Mine, Serpent's Eyes, AC Radio, and Time Stand Still.
That's right.
So let's listen to a little bit of Groovy Nights. This is a song that normally would never been heard by anybody, and it would have been lost to the sands of time had it not been for your unbelievable, uncanny discovery.
And it's... Let me set up the song a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this song, from what I've heard, it's a Lorna wrote it, and it's just about being young on a Saturday night in Chicago, growing up, especially in the 60s when there's a lot of bullshit going on. A lot of, you know, I say bullshit, like political stuff, race stuff.
Inequality.
Yeah, inequality. There's just like, a lot of stuff going on, but strife. You're still out there having fun. And, you know, so the juxtaposition of having a great time while there's this... A lot of stuff going on. Yeah. A terrible scene on the west side street. Burning buildings, right police. Everyone's trying to escape the heat. But there's eight dead nurses. Eight dead nurses. Through the night. The comedy lights. Through the night.
That is The Veil with their song Groovy Nights, which sounds a little bit like the MTV signature from music television in the 1980s.
Yeah, I've never really thought about that.
Next up is going to be Michael Jackson's debut Thriller.
Ooh.
Yeah, that'd be funny if like a band, like their biggest influence or like their biggest like takeaway from MTV, like all the music they had back then was the
the signature.
Or whatever it is.
Oh my God, I've listened to that so many times.
With the astronaut?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember planting the flag, right?
This is Martha Quinn. Yeah. This is Adam Curry. I'm amazed that I remember their names.
Yeah. And now
Godfather.
Yeah. Actually, one of those video jockeys went on to coin the term podcast with Dave Weiner, who was a coding.
He did the RSS thing, right?
He was the inventor of RSS technology or code that allowed blogs to, like emails, have attachments in them. And that's where when people started first, you know, in the early days of podcasting, and this is kind of relevant because, you know, we're celebrating 3,000 shows, 16 years.
Yeah. We're like 8 shows away from it.
We started podcasting in, you know, 2004. We started in February 8th, 2005. And at that time, there were about 50 shows. All of them were really blogs, audio blogs. Mm-hmm. So it was people talking by themselves about things that they found or, you know, and Adam Curry had a show called, I believe it was called The Podfather, or he might have called it something else before he changed the name. And he would play clips of podcasts and you would be like so thrilled when, you know, because we grew up, Adam Curry was this like hero, you know. And, you know, he was the cool with Martha Quinn, you know, it's like on television playing, you know, the music you were like, that was hip of the time.
Yeah.
And MTV really changed the music landscape. So here comes this video jockey from MTV and changes broadcasting and the history of and creates a whole new genre of media.
Wow.
You know, and I think, you know, our show, I don't know if our show influenced a lot of people and they just copied what they saw, or this is just what podcasting would naturally evolve into, is friends sitting around a dining room table and sharing ideas and sharing amazing things. And because of that vitality, that niche content, it would become relevant to millions of people around the world. You know, and so for us, it's like we were probably the first show that had, you know, a circle of friends talking about topics and sharing interviews and, you know, a sort of a reality show format that really borrowed a lot from cable television, you know, and at this time period, you know, the Veil came out, you know, this was also at the height of cable access. So Chicago, Austin, Texas, New York City just was a time
Atlanta.
When Atlanta, Georgia, you know, you had, like RuPaul and Lady Bunny and the
Princess now, Deandra
pieces, Deandra Peaks, not Princess Deandra.
You're right.
not the one who bitch slap, Diana Ross, the bitch who screams, yay! On television. And so, you know, it was a very exciting, like for me, it was a really exciting time because it allowed the technology had just gotten just good enough that you could create television and music without needing to like, you know, beg or, you know, give your future away or gather significant amounts of money just to make an album.
Yeah.
And, you know, here we are in 2021 in the middle of a pandemic. And it's just so, I imagine that like the people who do remember this music and remember The Veil are just like moved beyond words to see this important band of their youth come back to life all these years later.
Yeah, I think that the people I've spoken to, like they, you know, like I was saying earlier, Lorna Donnelly had a huge influence on the city, but also on people. And people like really miss her, and the fact that we released, you know, I say we being David Thomas and I released this record and more of her music. It just like helps her legacy even more. What else was I going to say about that?
If she were alive today, what would you ask her? You want to know about her that you don't feel like you got to know through? Like, what's the missing piece of the puzzle here?
What would I ask Lorna Donnelly?
Can I borrow some money? Because this thing was really expensive.
Oh, that's funny. What would I ask her? Oh, gosh. I would probably... I don't know. I'd probably ask her something really simple, like, you know, what is, what, you know, what does music mean to you? And it's such a simple question, and maybe a little, you know, it's not that specific.
That's a very open-ended question.
It's very open-ended, but you know, I think that Lorna, in her time, she was in a band called Da, like I was saying, in the early 80s.
That means yes in Russian.
Does it?
Yeah. Well,
there you go.
Da.
Da.
And she was in another band called Hip Deep Trilogy in the early 90s. And it was a different type of music. All of her music is very earnest and very close to the heart. Her lyrics, everything that she did in all of her eras. She had a few different eras where it was all very close to her heart. I think that's what tied me to the music when I first heard it. It wasn't just pop being pop, but it was like, it actually, the music was intricate, and the songs, the lyrics had depth to them.
Probably a deep person. Her day job was a librarian, right?
Eventually she became a librarian.
She was a post-punk librarian, so she'd be like, if you want to return the books or not, I don't give a fuck.
No, set them on fire when you're done.
She was pretty cool. So after music, she became, she went back to school. We're talking like late 90s, and she became a librarian, I think early 2000s. And she worked at Harold Washington.
The big library
she
downtown.
Worked at the one of the prettiest libraries.
This is a physical record. People can buy it today.
Right. Yeah.
And the record album itself is purple. So if you're or is it violet? If you're
we call it Lovelack Lilac. Lovecraft Lilac.
Oh my god.
So if you're a fan of Lilac albums, this is definitely a must. But the project doesn't just stop here. You're actually working on a documentary about the band and this group.
I am, yeah. I'm working on a documentary about the band and about Lorna. I've been doing that for about 3 years.
And so you've been interviewing a lot of people who were in the band and associated with the band.
Yeah, I've interviewed a lot of Lorna's old bandmates and friends and siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been this crazy experience, because it just started with just this idea, and then suddenly you're like, oh well, I just interviewed every one of her, you know, I've finished interviewing every one of her former bandmates 2 years later.
So was it like, I'm gonna do this record first and like, hey, this is great, like, I'm gonna do a documentary, or were you just kind of like, I want to know the whole story. Did it all happen kind of at once?
It was like it was like all at once. I was like, I'm going to make this record, and I'm going to document making this record from these tapes that I found. You know, this is an interesting story if you just stop right there. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'll just make a little 45 minute doc just on that. Mm-hmm. And then soon it became, you know, well, I want to know more about how this band started, why they ended, what you know, Lorna's past, Lorna's future after the veil, and so it became something that sort of this like obsession. You know, I feel that Lorna, I feel like she's underappreciated as of now, and that's no one's fault.
Well, that would be obvious because she died and she doesn't release any music, and she never was signed, and she was never discovered. She never really was played much on the radio. Like, you know, this is always like, you know, you never know where your art is going to take you. And sometimes it's not for you to even see the results of it. It may be other generations, like, you know, Greg Clemens' sons are back with his video camera now. Hey, Dave, put on your best shirt. He wants to talk to you.
No, it was, you know? I mean, Lorna was signed by a small label in Chicago in the early 90s for her band After the Veil.
Uh-huh.
So she did, and she was on a label called Autumn Records with Da. So she had small labels here. And what I mean, as far as like her legacy and whatever, I don't mean like, you know, people in Japan should know her. I just mean more people should know her, maybe like they know Naked Ray Gun.
Well, that's how I feel about it. You know, it's like, and sometimes we live in such a, like, you know, corporate music, corporate entertainment, you know, mass entertainment. Even, you know, we try to think about like ourselves as like into niche or community oriented culture.
Yeah.
But even on the internet, it's like, it's Sony Records and Warner Brother Records, sure, and, you know, MTV or whatever. Whoever wants you to see something, you're going to see it, even if you don't want to see it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I agree.
I'm not interested in Justin Bieber's music at all, yeah, but I can sing you his music.
Yeah.
And that's a success to how aggressive that marketing is. And, you know, you know, whenever some person who's been part of that system has a big announcement to make, then even if you're not interested in what they have to say, you're still sort of like, feel like you're a duck being fed corn for foie gras. You know, it's like the culture's being shoved down your throat, even if you don't want to participate in it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think like the culture can be very, very reactive if you let it, and it can be very like, oh, this is the music I'm hearing. I guess Megan Thee Stallion is popular now, and Adele is coming out with her new record, and it's like you have to be proactive in order to find things like this, in order to find things that are interesting, maybe.
Well, and for you, it's like it's creating your own soundtrack. It's creating your own unique experience that no one else can really, you know, replicate. And so by sort of lifting up Lorna and putting your time and money into the Veil and bringing them back from what, you know, an existence that never fully materialized in their lifetime. Like, we don't know what the public reaction is going to this album or to the documentary.
Yeah.
And, you know, wouldn't it be ironic that they would become this like big thing decades after their death? Even, you know,
I do think that can definitely happen. Hopefully if the everything works out, the documentary, what else was I going to say about that? No, I think that this can definitely be, you know, the music is, I didn't make this record just because I made it because I, you know, I believe in the music, and the music was, you know, created by this, in my opinion, a Chicago icon who was definitely gone too soon.
What's your relationship to your father now?
Oh, it's good. I mean, he lives in Madrid.
In Spain.
Yeah, he lives in Madrid. But
what's his thought about the project? I mean, he's heard the album now. Oh. He's like, oh, I remember that.
He doesn't remember any of that, but
yeah, I was too drunk to remember anything.
Because this didn't happen in high school. Uh-huh. No, he's extremely supportive, extremely proud. Yeah. And, voice.
Cause you're kind of like hanging out with, you know, his high school circle of friends to some degree.
Well, it's weird. I mean,
the guy dated your aunt.
Yeah.
He was friends in the same baseball team as your dad, right?
Yeah. I would say the connection with my dad, I mean, it was a small school and they played on the same baseball team.
Yeah.
So there was a, you know, intimate, they knew each other. I would say the most...
They probably saw each other's dicks in the locker room.
Maybe.
Your penis. Yeah,
good callback. But probably the big one is my aunt, you know, because they, you know, when you date someone for 2 years in high school, that's like...
That's a huge thing.
That's a big thing. Yeah. You're dating. Mm-hmm. You're going to two proms probably.
So is she kind of like, what? You're hanging out with my old boyfriend?
Yeah, a little bit.
Wow.
She thinks it's funny. I mean, she's not like super supportive. Like, I talk to her all the time about it, but you know, when I see her the holidays, she gets a kick out of it, and she's
That's amazing.
Yeah. But yeah, yeah. So, then
I look forward to it. Do you have a project or a timeline where you think it might be done?
Mark, the answer to that question is always soon.
Yeah, yeah, it's been soon for a while. I will say that
ask a documentary film when it's going to be made.
I will say that the pandemic...
He's working very hard on it.
The pandemic helped. I don't know. I hope to have some sort of cut to show people by January.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to it.
Yeah, I look forward to showing it to you and getting your opinion. Be kind.
I'm sure I'll love it.
I give it a 51 Rotten Tomatoes. Says Mark.
Well, I do like the music. It's a callback to, like, you know, the 80s.
Well, that's like the music, you know, the post-punk sound is really, you know, what when we think of, like, you know, 80s rock and roll. I mean, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts and, you know, Wang Chung and... Mm-hmm. You know, like, I was listening to some of the music and I was like, this, it has this flavor for me of like dancing, so it sounds weird, dancing with a girl for the first time and feeling absolutely nothing.
There
was a sweetness and an innocence and an excitement. And, you know, like for us as kids, we would watch MTV and then it would make us want to have dances because we would see it on television.
Yeah.
And so for like previous generations that didn't have that, they were not as into music the way we were because we had this like cultural phenomena that we would, you know, that it was the internet for us. We would get some popcorn or, you know, soda and plant our asses down and read comic books or whatever or magazines. But MTV would be playing and we'd be like, oh, it's the new, you know, Tina Turner video. It's
Headbangers Ball.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
So definitely. It was an event.
An event. And you would talk about it at school. You know, you'd talk. Like, I remember we had an assembly in eighth grade to watch the documentary of Michael Jackson's Thriller, the making of Michael Jackson's Thriller. And I'm like, I'm not sure this is supposed to be educational, but nobody was complaining. And we were glued to watching that thing, you know?
Oh my gosh.
And hearing Michael Jackson going, you got to growl more, Michael, growl. You know, Francis Ford Coppola is like, growl like a werewolf. And he's like,
Can we get Tito in here to stunt double?
And you know, so they're falling in Michael Jackson's, you know, voice and he's like, go away, you know, his demon voice.
That wasn't him?
I don't think it was. Or they may have, you know, gotten somebody else. Because Michael Jackson had a very soft spoken voice.
Oh yeah, we all know.
You know, it's close to midnight.
Oh yeah, I remember when Black or White debuted like in 1991 after like The Simpsons, and it was just like, everyone, this is really important.
That's exactly
morphing technology.
The morphing technology
was
like
brand new.
I was like, oh my god! So and I'm like 12 years old, going nuts.
I wish everybody could see my friend Martian Delalis's parody of the ending of Black or White because he had his friends, you know, without a shirt on.
Oh yeah,
because all the models are shirtless.
Yeah,
and they were doing that movement.
Yeah,
you
they're
know?
Going this and they're changing,
where they're nodding, and he just did a crossfades.
Oh sure.
And it worked. It looks so wonderfully low tech.
Oh, wow.
Version of the same thing.
Yeah.
And it was hysterically funny.
Yeah.
You know, and that was the thing. It was like, you know, things felt so glamorous and sophisticated. And it's like Corey Hart singing about, you know, you can never surrender.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, polemic anthem, you know, and as kids, we'd be like, we're not gonna take it.
Yeah.
No, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Twisted Sister was, you know, so there was this like spirit of like rebellion. We just didn't know why we were rebelling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It was kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I remember MTV. I mean, I'm just a little younger than you, but yeah, I remember like, you know, just being glued to the TV, watching Def Leppard or watching some of my favorites even today are like Tears for Fears. Like
oh, yeah.
Shout and
Everybody wants to rule.
What's the other one? The one in the library?
Or She Blinded Me with Science.
Yeah.
Thomas Dolby.
I wanted to be with you alone.
Tears for Fears. She Drives Me Crazy. Yeah. I mean,
all the Eurythmics videos. People were wild about Peter Gabriel's when he did that one with all the vegetables. That was everybody's sledgehammer.
You know, it's funny because it's like
stop action animation. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you look at like Tears for Fears, for instance, and maybe this kind of ties into the Lorna Donnelly and the Veil record, but it's like when you think of Tears for Fears, people who love Tears for Fears, it's like there are other bands who are kind of like Tears for Fears back then that we don't even know about them or like they may have
forgotten
forgotten, and when you discover them, it's almost like you're discovering like a new plane of 1985. Mm-hmm. You know, you're discovering like this music that's totally in the same era, but you just don't know it yet. And it's kind of like Tears for Fears, maybe kind of like Depeche Mode. And it's just this new thing that is old too. And that's what's cool about Lorna Donnelly. And that's what's cool about me. Like when I like discover old music, I'm discovering something that's in the same pocket as this band, but it's totally like new to me. And that's how like Lorna Donnelly and the Veil is. It's like a time capsule, and it might seem kind of familiar, but it's also brand new.
That's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
Eric Clemens, The Veil, Lorna Donnelly and The Veil, Time Stand Still is available everywhere you can buy music now. And you can also get it through the Bandcamp link.
That's right. Just to be clear, it's David Thomas renamed the band Lorna Donnelly and The Veil. It was just The Veil. He renamed it Lorna Donnelly and The Veil to honor her. The Bandcamp link is really simple. Lorna Donnelly and The Veil .bandcamp. Let me say where else.
And that's where you can get the actual physical record.
That's where you can get the physical record. You can also listen to samples of it. And you can also listen to it on YouTube for free. You can listen to it at Spotify, Apple, pretty much anywhere.
Where is it good streams. Music for a drag queen to lip sync to?
Is it good music? I think Groovy Nights is great. And I think Gunpowder Mouth. Maybe Gunpowder Mouth isn't as legible, but yeah, definitely Hold Me and Groovy Nights are really good for drag queens. Yeah, and that's why I made this record, actually, was for drag queens.
Aww.
They're like, this is my brand now, is mid to late 80s MTV garage band music.
MTV, late 80s MTV trash.
The M in MTV stands for Mother, okay? And pay tribute to Mother Television, honey. The TV doesn't stand what you think it stands for, loca. Get that shit out of your head. And I want to be lip-syncing to Lorna Donnelly and The Veil this Saturday at the club. So you guys all be there with your dollars, your corintadas.
Mm-hmm. Or you can also Venmo at Feast of Fun.
Yeah, Cash App, Feast of Fun, Venmo, PayPal, Feast of Fun, honey. Come on, make it rain. Yes.
That'd be kind of funny, like, to juxtapose that scene from the mid to late 80s, because, you know, there was a queer sensibility, like everybody was gay to some degree, you know.
Well, there's a lot of makeup, you know,
gender ambiguity,
and what did they call it back then? They call it androgyny.
Yeah, I mean, I remember picking up the National Enquirer, and it was the headline was like, MTV is making your children gay.
Yeah.
Success, mission accomplished. And they had a photo of Annie Lennox, you know.
Okay, androgynous.
Yeah. You know, Sweet Dreams, and Boy George.
Yeah.
And Boy George and his drummer. And so, this is kind of an interesting story, is that my friend and I, when we would watch MTV, we were doing a crank calling game where we just call people randomly and see how long we could keep them on the phone.
Nice.
In Spanish or in English?
In English or in Spanish, because we were bilingual. So we would, you know, we could switch.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we found a gay guy who started talking to us, and we developed a friendship with him. And he would tell us how he knew friends. He basically told me, he was the first gay person I ever met, you know, who really explained to me what homosexuality was. You know, we were 11 and 12 years old.
He's fucking jacking off. Maybe. Oh, it's really interesting.
First, no, but he was telling me that basically the reason, and this is true, Culture Club broke up is because the Boy George and his drummer were lovers and they split apart.
Was that wasn't an open thing, open rumor, was it? That was
a gay guy lives in Puerto Rico, who probably travels to New York and Europe.
A lot of us, that rumor was around. People had heard it.
Really? And we were no way.
You know, back in the day, you didn't need the internet to start these rumors. It just word of mouth get around.
There's a great podcast that we did about the queer rumors of pop stars, of you know, who started it, why they started it. What was it? Rod Stewart's Goblet of Cum?
Yes, he knows exactly who started it. It was somebody in his band started it.
Yeah, and then Sylvester Stallone started a rumor on somebody. I can't remember. I think it was
Bon Jovi or something.
No, I think it was the Goblet of Cum.
He said that the Goblet of Cum was from somebody in his band. And I think he had to share a room with his kid or something like that. Remember? Something happened, so he got fired. And so he was just
started that rumor.
Yeah. Remember, wasn't it Bon Jovi that had the gallons of cum and He had to get his stomach pumped.
No, that was Rod Stewart.
Rod Stewart. Yeah,
it was Richard Gere and the Gerbil.
Yeah,
that was the Richard Gere and the Gerbil was started by Sylvester Stallone.
No,
I think that's who started it. Yeah.
I can't believe Sylvester. Why would Sylvester?
Because they were mad or something. It was like a lot of these gay rumors.
Oh, is he the one? Oh, because he lost a role to him or
lost
something?
A role to him. That's right. Yeah, and also.
It really fucking stuck. That thing, we know it. I know. Richard Gere gerbils. That is going to be on his tombstone.
Well, that's what Lady Bunny has on her tombstone. And she's still alive.
Yeah, that's my new website, richardgeregerbils.com.
I love gerbils. They're my friends.
Yeah. You know, and people just don't raise gerbils like they used to. I mean, now you have hamsters and guinea pigs. I think the gerbils just aren't.
You can't stick those up your ass, though. Yeah. I tried.
Wow. Do they stick hamsters up their ass?
Yeah, but you have to wrap them in duct tape because the little claws will get you.
Oh.
Yeah, but the convulsing still works.
Oh, cool.
I would never recommend
anybody. Don't do it. No harm.
One guy went to, he actually stuck an eel up his rectum.
An eagle?
An eel. And it tore through his intestine and he died from septic poisoning. So you don't want to fuck with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, if you're going to put it up your butt, put sushi, not some alive, you know.
put a shampoo bottle.
There was a song that Eddie Murphy sang at that time, Mink Coat Up Your Butt. Do you remember that? Yeah. Put a mink coat up your butt. Put a light bulb up your butt.
Really?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, it was
produced by Rick James.
No, this is a real song, yeah.
The Baltimore Museum of Art dedicated its first ever all-gender restroom to John Waters. It's the John Waters Gender Neutral Bathroom.
Mm. And tea room.
And tea room.
Tea room?
Well, it's, you know, I think that you share the sinks, you know what I mean?
Oh, sure,
but
sure.
The stalls are all private stalls, and the stalls go from top to bottom.
Oh, that's perfect.
You know, and
that's
so how it should perfect. Be. Yeah, and of course, you know, I mean, if you're in an art museum, you get bored with the art, you can go...
You can make your own entertainment.
You can make your own entertainment because those are perfect for like making your own little tea room because nobody's going to catch you because, you know, it's top to bottom. You can't look under the stall, see what's going on.
Oh, that's true.
Any of that kind of stuff. Now, I learned about a double decker from John Waters. Do you know what a double decker is?
Yeah.
Is when you shit in the top of the toilet tank.
Mm-hmm.
And then surprise, surprise.
What was that on John? What John Waters movie was that?
I don't know if it was from a movie or from one of his books or something.
From
or
his book.
I want to say maybe even it might have even been from a talk show appearance. I'm not 100% sure. But, you know, most toilets in those kind of places don't have a water tank. So,
sure. You
know, I wouldn't expect any double deckers in there.
No. That's cool, though, John Waters. I like how he's kind of true to Baltimore. He's mm-hmm. pretty, like, pro-Baltimore. It seems like he is.
He loves Baltimore. He's got a house there still. And,
that's cool.
And he grew up there, and he adores it. He's their favorite son.
That's
cool. Yeah, it's Charm City.
Mm-hmm.
Charm City.
The only reason I know about Baltimore is the two people, Peaches Christ and John Waters.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it'd be like, what? You know, just another city in America, you know?
Yeah.
But they've sort of managed to sort of like make their hometown seem.
Well,
epic.
Baltimore really, it has, you know, it's that East Coast working class. It's kind of like a rough and tumble, or traditionally it has been. I'm sure a lot of things people are getting priced out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they are. One thing that John got right with his movies is the hair. They do have a special attention to certain hairstyles in Baltimore.
Really?
No hair,
and like when I was working in restaurants in Chicago, like, and you'd get tourists sometimes and they'd be from Baltimore, they would really have like bouffants. And this is the 90s. And they would have
like the women would
like
have
the someone would have like bouffants. Whoa. Some of them would have some really wacky big hairstyles.
Really?
I think it's like a cultural thing to that. To that community more so than in some other places.
Did it seem
it might not be the same today in 2021, but definitely during the 90s there was a certain aesthetic still.
Wow.
Yeah.
One documentary film that everybody's drooling with anticipation. I see you shiver with anticipation.
Say it.
Tiger King 2 is coming back.
Oh, nice.
Just when you thought it was safe to go back into the preserve.
The search, Tiger King 2, the search for more money.
Yeah. And so Carol Baskin, hey, you cool cats and kittens, the creator of the SCAT Bitcoin, I guess the cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm. It's called SCAT?
It's called SCAT.
Yeah.
Ugh.
And she is suing the producers and Netflix.
She
demanding that footage of her be taken out.
Oh, really? Why?
She feels that they paint her in an unflattering light.
As a murderess? As a potential murderess.
Because I guess the documentary starts to explore that she may have killed her husband.
I mean, that's probably the next... She was Tiger King's nemesis.
You know, she hated him and he hated her. And, they make it seem as though he's convicted of trying to kill her.
Oh, yeah.
So,
but yeah, it's a good lane. You can let's explore more about this husband who just went away and. You know, was never seen. No, that's a crazy. It's a cool documentary. It's really sad when you think about it. But
I mean, it's just so freakish.
And of course, Carol Baskin denies that she murdered her first husband.
Of course,
She says after the documentary aired, my phone rang incessantly with people screaming obscenities at me. After a while, it slowed down. I didn't take it personally, but it really affected my husband and my daughter. If someone said something about someone you love, you would want to protect them. And, you know, Joseph Maldonado Passage is also in the documentary, best known as Joe Exotic.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to be exploring his relationship to Trump and asking Trump to give him a pardon, mm-hmm. which Trump did not. So,
which I have to say, I was kind of surprised.
I was, Trump, it's like fate. And the universe gives him every single chance to redeem himself. And every single time he chooses the wrong door, it's like he's and he's still alive and he's still worshipped by people. But it's like it's just the power of racism in America that you could be just this awful, truly awful person that with the pandemic. Trump could have been we need to unite America, blah, blah, blah. He could be the great hero, the great savior. Make it your patriotic duty to get vaccinated.
It was a layup.
Wear a mask.
It was like a layup. All he had to do, like Giuliani. What did he do during 9/11? All he did was just stay strong. I'm going to go to the World Series.
It was a layup. Yeah.
It was a layup. Yeah.
And that's a basketball term from an easy move.
Shot. Yeah.
And he chose to fuck it up.
Yeah. But he's a germaphobe, they say, and he's views sickness as a weakness. So he viewed it as, and it's his own pride and his own hubris.
Hey, speaking of
a terrible person.
Speaking of, Joe Exotic being pardoned or not being pardoned? Mm-hmm. I was driving just about a half mile from here and about a week ago. Mm-hmm. And I saw Blagojevich jogging.
You did?
Oh, with white hair, not the black hair.
Yeah, he had the white hair, yeah.
Oh, did you run up to him and take a selfie?
I would have said it was in a bad way, but I would have honked my horn. If I was riding my bike, I would have said hi to him. I mean, at the end of the day, he served his time.
Where was he jogging?
Should I say?
Yeah.
I mean, on here?
In Ravenswood area, I would imagine.
Yeah, Ravenswood.
So, where we live, in our neighborhood.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, he didn't, he and his wife, he's still married to her, right?
I think so.
That's so crazy.
For people that don't know,
they still live in the same area.
Was our governor who was sent to prison because he basically tried to sell a Senate seat.
Yeah, Obama's seat.
Because when Obama became president, he was able to appoint somebody, mm-hmm. and he wanted special favors for it.
Yeah.
And that stuff is done all the time, but it's usually with a wink and a nudge, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But he was blatant about it because, it was rumored that he was very high on cocaine.
Cool.
All the time. Now, that's just a rumor. I don't know. But, as a politician, as a governor, you can't just say those things.
Yeah.
He went to prison and he came out of prison. He still has all the hair, but now it's white, right?
That's why, he doesn't dye it anymore. And mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. The way I look at it is he did something wrong. And he did serve 10 years or something. I mean, he served a long time.
Well, he's like Joe Quimby in The Simpsons, It's mm-hmm. Part of it was he was almost comically corrupt,
Yeah, and people look at, Illinois and say, look at the corruption that you have. You have the governor before him. I think he was
Ryan.
He was in prison as well.
Yeah.
But, you have to look at it. It's like these, we root this out typically, or we try and root
it out.
We prosecute it. Whereas, some of these Republican states, they live with it. And they know it's Republican. But, they're like, America, freedom, there's nothing to see here, and they get away with it.
I agree.
But because we we'll catch it and we'll prosecute it, and Democrats we'll take them to court.
Mm-hmm.
Did you celebrate Halloween at all?
I didn't celebrate it really. I gave out candy and I really enjoyed doing that. But I didn't go
this time without razor blades.
Yeah, this time without razor blades and without a costume. Without, I was naked. I love Halloween. I don't always dress up or go to parties, but yeah. I think it's the best holiday in the world.
Well, Mariah Carey issued a tweet the day after.
A video,
actually. Yeah. She's all dressed up with like a Christmas and takes like a sledgehammer and starts smashing these pumpkins. And then the music for like All I Want for Christmas Is You.
Because Mark and I got married on Halloween.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's what our marriage certificate says. We were married on Halloween.
Is it 2013?
14, was it?
14, yeah.
Yeah, 2014.
Yeah.
I know the three of us are like, I don't remember when anything happened.
Well, I'm not in trouble for that.
Could be 15.
I think it was Mariah Carey, ours said, I do, and then Mark had a pumpkin that says, me too.
Mm-hmm. And I boo.
I boo, that's right. I boo, me too. And so Mariah Carey's pumpkin says, it's not time. And she smashes the one that says not. And mm-hmm. so it's time.
And well, then she's got graphics at the end. Says it's time to smash that pumpkin and treat it as pie because we still got to get through Thanksgiving. Because I think she's like, please, I don't want to hear about this song until like afterwards. For some reason, people just hate that song.
All I Want for Christmas Is You?
Yeah, they hate it. Especially, I think, gay people. They're obsessed with hating it. And so we go from people complaining about candy corn.
Corn's amazing.
I love candy corn too. So September and October, it's I hate candy corn season. November and December and even the beginning of January is the I hate Mariah Carey, All I Want for Christmas Is You song.
I mean, maybe that's the only thing I like. I mean, I don't love it, but it's like it's not that bad. And you know what? Here's the thing. It's like, it's not easy to do an original holiday song, Christmas song, I'll say, that is like, it's an institute. It's like,
it resonates with people.
Well, yeah. And it's going to be there. Like it's going to be here. Like Bing Crosby stuff is now. And like other stuff is now. It's like an original Christmas song. That's 30 years old. It's like, that's impressive.
Yeah.
I don't get annoyed by it. I get annoyed. I mean, there's like some Celine Dion Christmas songs and stuff or the Sarah McLachlan, Bare Naked Ladies one, Star of Wonder, Star, and it's like, oh my God, this is fucking.
Well, that's
horrible.
The thing, like how I feel about RuPaul's Drag Race at this point. It is sort of like Mariah Carey's,
really?
All I Want for Christmas Is You. It's just like
it's been done.
It's just been done to death, and then it's just like people are like, oh, I love that drag queen,
Her mind.
What is it? Ugh, her mind. She's so, what is it? We used to have a name for a generic name for a drag queen was Peaches McGillicuddy. But then we met Peaches Christ, so we can't use that one.
Sure, sure, sure.
But we used to like, oh, Peaches McGillicuddy, she's so sassy. She's so clever. Oh, she is reinventing drag, honey. Her own brand is so on point. Ooh, our mind. Ooh, oh, her drag,
Is it just a lot of sameness?
Yeah.
And you're just like done
they're
with
all
the sameness?
It just feels like clones of each other. And they're like an imperfect. It's like when you photocopy a photograph and it becomes unrecognizable. And that's like, like disco got into that point, Christmases. But, Mr. Rogers had a different take on this traditions. He says, part of it is it's the pleasure of knowing what comes next can be very comforting.
That's true.
And it's about building stability in your life. And if you live in an unstable world on unstable times, and certainly these times qualify as that. Then, RuPaul's Drag Race or Mariah Carey or disco music or Christmas songs can be very comforting because it's a light at the end of the dark tunnel. It's a way to stay grounded.
I feel like I also, too, like when that song came out, I was living in Germany for the first 2 years that it came out. So, when I heard it, probably like that, because it probably played in Germany, but I just didn't listen to the radio very much. So it would have just like, I wouldn't have heard it, And so when I came back to the States of 96 or something like that, probably would have been the first time I heard it. So I don't feel like I didn't get that first hit.
Yeah, I guess I guess it never, it doesn't really bother me, and you know, it's like it is what it is. I mean, every Christmas song gets a little annoying.
So now when people, anytime, I'm going to ask all our listeners to do this, anytime somebody complains about it anywhere, just post Lady Bunny's parody video on there. And so the people will get so sick of that parody video that they'll get sick of complaining about it. Because they'll know, like, if I complain about Mariah Carey, I'm going to get hit with Lady Bunny's All I Want for Christmas parody.
She does a parody?
Yeah.
Is it bad?
That's wonderful.
It's hysterical. Fausto can sing the whole thing.
I won't get a thing for Christmas.
But he doesn't have
It's not that I'm that needy. I gave up on getting presents. And we won't have a Christmas tree. No. Something or iPhone as I non leftover Thanksgiving turkey bone. Why did I have to marry an Orthodox Jew?
What's the jingle bells behind you?
That's there somewhere.
Use the tambourine.
No, it doesn't.
It won't have the same.
Well, we're not in our
Christmas yet.
Not yet, but it's coming. And so it's amazing how we go from like it's Christmas, it's Halloween, and then it's hating on Mariah Carey time.
Aw.
Yeah.
Now I feel bad for her.
I know. Anyway, Eric, I want to thank
Wait. Last but not least, Madonna.
Madonna.
Why is Madonna so divisive? She posed photos where she's once again paying tribute to Marilyn Monroe in the cover of V magazine. And, you know, I think she looks more like Mae West than Madonna. You know, and Mae West was a comical figure. And Madonna also has a sense of humor.
Sure.
And, you know, she's posing herself in this photo shoot. And in the nightstand, it's just like a array of pills, prescription medication. So there's definitely a tongue-in-cheek quality to it. And so I posted it on the our group forum, facebook.com/group/visafun. And I said, Madonna says she's channeling Marilyn Monroe, but she's looking more like Mae West and Sextet. And people are shooketh. Like just hundreds of comments.
I don't think the kids say shooketh anymore, Fausto.
People are shooketh by what you said.
They're just there's a lot of anger and divisiveness
about you.
Madonna is one of those people. Like a lot of people, like they love her or they hate her. Typically,
let me read you a comment here. Like Allison writes, "I'm disgusted by Madonna. I hated her recent interviews where she's so negative and sleazy, and then celebrates using opiates on Jimmy Kimmel." I'm sorry, Jimmy Fallon. How dare she make fun of Marilyn Monroe's overdosing on pills? That's not funny. We have a huge opiate pandemic in America. It's not a joke. And then there's other people who are just like, this is brilliant. Yeah. Oh, her mind. Ugh, her style, you know.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think she, I don't really know her that well anymore, but I think.
Did you ever know Madonna?
Well, you know, like back in, I guess I knew like MTV.
Like a virgin.
Yeah, like a virgin. From what I've seen, I saw that Jimmy Fallon thing. I didn't realize there's opiates involved, but I don't know. It's kind of it's nice that she has like a sense of humor about stuff. I don't know. Like, why take her seriously? What is she like? I don't know.
I think, you know, and actually, if you guys have Paramount Plus, definitely go check out Madame X. This is probably Madonna's last thing.
Don't say that.
Well, you know, she has physical stuff that's keeping her from dancing.
She'll be bionic.
She might be, yeah.
She'll become bionic. But she's got the money. We could rebuild her.
Stronger, better, faster. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, maybe she doesn't have to dance, but can't she just like age into like Tony Bennett and just like walk around?
In terms of the Madonna that we used to know, that Madonna is no more. But she's still alive. She is still thriving.
What do you mean the Madonna we used to know?
The one that that did these elaborate dance performances.
You don't know. Cheetah Rivera is still dancing and she's 80, you know?
So if you look at her footage, you know, she's walking with crutches. She reminds me of Ronnie Coleman, the bodybuilder.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like, who's just like, yeah, buddy, nothing more than the peanut. And he's like walking in crutches. Yeah. He just got a Lifetime Achievement Award from Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, really?
And he called Arnold Schwarzenegger the greatest bodybuilder of all time, but Arnold like visibly moved, says, "You're one of the greatest bodybuilders of all time."
And he's like, "It's nothing but a peanut."
Nothing but a peanut. You know, this nothing is a man peanut. Who's like crippled by his sport. You know, he's like, I mean, he's not going to walk ever again on his own. And he's walking with crutches, but still goes to the gym.
Yeah.
And still lifts weights, you know?
He sure does, yeah.
Nothing wow. but a
same,
peanut.
The same gym he's been going to for 30
Houston,
years.
In Houston, Texas. Yeah. Houston or Dallas, I think it's.
I forgot.
Yeah, but he's.
And then he goes to the Soul Food Kitchen afterwards. And
well, the Black Eyed Pea.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. He actually says in his speech that his wife and his family, he says, you know, a lot of athletes like to think of their achievements as a solitary thing, but you know, we're all surrounded by our family, our communities, our gyms, our coaches, our sponsors who make what we do possible. And you know, it's a miracle that you know, whether you're a football player, a bodybuilder, or a dancer, or somebody, that you have this a figure skater, you have somebody, a community that supports you to push your body to the limit, you know. And so within that spirit, we're starting a new podcast soon called Let's Grow Big Together. It's Mark's sneaky way of getting hot, muscular guys into our home.
That what? It was your idea.
But it's actually a serious and comical conversation about building muscle, the fascination with muscle, and the fascination people receive when they build muscle, coming from an LGBTQ angle. So it's your inspirations, it's how you do it, and how it impacts you and your friends and community. So it's the adventure continues, darling. Mm. And it's a new podcast from Feast of Fun.
That's great.
Yeah, honey, 3,000 podcasts, and you're one of our top tens. Yeah.
Really? Which yes. one? The penis one?
No. I'm saying in the countdown.
On the countdown. Oh, yeah. Oh.
The countdown to 3,000.
Well, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. No scrubs.
no scrubs for the final 10. Do you have your you don't have to say it obviously, but you have your first your 3,000 picked out?
No.
The 3,000 show is going to be
an idea.
We have a very solid idea, and I've been working on it. Mark's been working.
It's a clip show.
It's a clip show.
It's an 80-hour clip show.
Well, you know, part of it is that we're walking down the memory, our memory lane on, you know, this extraordinary adventure that Mark and I have gone through together. And, you know, we're going to tell you all the hot tea, honey.
Nice.
We're going to lift the lid on the stew of Feast of Fun. You're going to get a big bowl of goodness.
So hot tea means
sex hookups and
hot tea
gossip.
Is the truth. A tea room is a bathroom where you have sex.
Okay.
Okay.
So yeah, right. Tea is slang for many things.
Yeah.
It's for meth. It's for dick sex
in the bathroom.
Testosterone. It's tea is a letter that means a lot of things.
Yeah.
Tina Turner.
Tina Turner. Oh,
no, he just calls her T.
Mr. T.
Mr. T.
Mr. T. Yeah.
I pity the fool.
I think that might have to be one of our podcasts. What does T mean to you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
T. It's just sounds turning into Sesame Street, but with drugs. So, Eric, where what's next for Lorna Donnelly and the Veil? The Grand Tour?
Yeah. I wish that would be great. No, I think it's just keep promoting the record. Hopefully this project that I'm working on will be, ready sooner rather than later. And, just keep getting the word out and, selling these and making people happy and making people, learn more about Lorna.
Do you want to leave us with another song from there?
I would love to. This song is actually it was a song that they recorded, but David sort of forgot about it, but it was in the tapes, and luckily they had a master of it that we were able to sweeten up, and it's called Time Stands Still, and I named the record after it, so, and it's probably my favorite song on the record.
Time Stands Still, Lorna Donnelly and the Veil. If you want to buy the physical album, which will be a collector's, visit the links on our podcast. Just scroll down. There's going to be that. Or visit our website, feastofun.com, home of fabulousness. Our guest is Eric Clemens. The P stands for...
Penetration.
Paul.
Yeah.
And Mark, thank you so much for doing the show.
Thank you, Fausto.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.